It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. This is a place where you get to have lunch with the biggest leaders around the world, and you get to improve your life and your business. That's what Money for Lunch is all about. Look, money is not the most important thing, but it's certainly one of the top, I don't know, two, three, or four. And when you get a bunch of entrepreneurs together, sooner or later, we start talking about ideas. We start talking about business. We start talking about making things bigger and better and bolder. And money is the subtext, if you will, of that conversation. Not to mention that money is really kind of underlining for a lot of us in a lot of different ways. It dictates how much time off we get, what kind of vacations we have, how we dress, the quality of our clothing. But we're really more interested in how to better our business, better our lives. And I'm telling you, this is a great this is going to be a great show. We have Stephen Floyd going to be helping you with your taxes. And you know what? Holiday season is here, which means tax season is just a few months away. And I'm excited to dive into that topic. But before we get started with that, I wanted to talk about you and your business. What business are you really in? And don't say I'm in the service business. Don't say, hey, I sell products. I'm not in the restaurant. You're not in the restaurant business. You're not in the product business. You're not in the attorney business. You're not in the doctor business. You are in the people business. Everything revolves around people. Technology is only there to enhance and advance our relationship with people. If you don't have people, you don't have a business. And if you don't have good employees, you have a bad business. So it's all about the people. You are in the people business. Get it in your head. All right. Enough of my little, admonitions, my soapboxing. Let's get this party started. As I mentioned, my first guest today, Stephen Floyd. Stephen Floyd, a certified tax coach, has been in the financial arena for over 35 years and is an experienced author, lecturer, tax strategist. Stephen is passionate about the philosophy that it is every citizen's right obligation to pay the least amount of taxes that is legally possible. Emphasize legally possible. To that end, he has devoted his entire career to educating and guiding his clients to building and maintaining the wealth that they have worked so hard to obtain. Stephen Floyd, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Matt, you know what? I'm excited to have you here. You know, taxes is one of those weird things that most of us pay. We gripe about paying it, and yet we try to avoid it, right? And when I say avoid it, we try to avoid thinking about it. We still might pay our taxes, but man, we want to, like, it's almost like going to the dentist. You want to, you know, you want to just get over it. You want to get over it as quickly as possible. You don't investigate, too deeply. And I think taxes is one of those pillars of wealth. And what I mean by that is, I should say, tax management or tax strategies. Without a good tax strategy, you not only do you overpay, but you hurt, you know, you can hurt your wealth, you can hurt your family, you know, you can hurt your retirement. Your thoughts, agree, disagree?
Of course I would disagree with that. That's why I'm in this business. As you mentioned earlier, you mentioned this is a people business, and I'm in the business of solving people's tax problems. And more times than not, people do have a tax problem, but they don't even know that. Another thing that I can relate to, it's like going to the dentist. You'll go when you have a toothache, but you won't go to do preventative measures. Typically, that would be your teeth cleaning and whatnot. But that's where I come involved, is I do those types of preventative types of things to have you pay the least amount of tax legally possible. And let's face it, you know, we know two things in life, death and taxes. So why don't you take a proactive approach and deal with those taxes? And it doesn't have to be a painful experience. In fact, it can be rather enlightening. And what it does give you, it gives you this thing called peace of mind, knowing that you're paying the least amount of tax legally possible. So it is an integral part of anybody's financial life, in my opinion.
All right. Well, you know what? Let me ask you this, because I get this all the time when I start talking about taxes. And again, I'm not a tax expert, but I have a tax expert to help me, just like I think everybody should. So sooner or later, this comes up. And I just want to get your opinion on this. So we'll be talking and whatever. And somebody will say, yeah, but when you start taking all those deductions, you're going to get audited. So how do you answer that? What's your answer when somebody is, afraid of being audited for legally taking their deductions?
Well, number one, a lot of the strategies that I get involved with actually reduce your audit rate. As an example, if you're a sole proprietor and whatnot, and you own a business, your chances of being audited are higher than if you had a separate business entity. Many people don't know that. So that would be a prime example of doing that kind of activity that would help you reduce your audit chances. And when I get involved with a client, anytime I might recommend a strategy, no matter what it might be, I always cross the T's and dot the I's. I make sure that the paperwork's in place. So if the auditor comes in and wants to audit you, I use the term, you are now bulletproof. If I sign off on a tax return, I feel comfortable sitting in front of that auditor defending every activity that I promoted. When I give somebody a written tax plan, which is what I'm really all about, I always cite IRS code. I also cite private letter rulings and other things that relate specifically to that strategy that are in writing. So if you have a question, let's say on a home office deduction, which is a big question mark with a lot of people, I can back that up with actual IRS code and promote and make a real good reasons why you should take that. Now, of course, that's always up to you if you still want to go for that additional step taking that deduction. But again, you have now the option of doing that. So again, I feel confident with the strategies that I promote that they're backed up by IRS code. So to answer your question specifically, red flags can be reduced by proper tax management.
Yes, and I like that. And we've said it a couple of different times, but I want to reemphasize that what we're talking about is not something, going off the deep end, radical stuff. We're talking, that you as a tax coach, a tax expert, a tax strategist is using the tax code to help your clients legally reduce their tax liability, as all citizens have that right and obligation to do.
Of course they do. The one major difference about myself and many other CPAs or accountants out there is most of them are what I call reactive tax persons. They get your stack of paperwork around April the 15th, and they do a tax return and put the right numbers in the right box. So when it comes to planning, April 15th is not the time to plan. Right now, this time of the year is the time to plan. So tax season for me is now. When I sit down with the client and we go over their situation, what things can we put in place now to help you save taxes? Because after the first of the year, it's too late.
Yes, I love that. You know what? And that's what you were talking about earlier, having that preventative dental care. You have to have that preventative. You have to have that preventative tax care too. So let's talk about this. Let's get into some of this nitty gritty. What is the difference between, let's say, a deduction and a credit?
The fundamental difference between a deduction and a credit, what a deduction does, it reduces your taxable income, whereas a credit reduces your actual tax. So let me give you an example. Let's say you have income of $100,000 and deductions of maybe $30,000. That'll leave you $70,000 worth of taxable income. We'll calculate the tax, and that's how you come up with that amount. Now, taking it one step further, if you have a credit involved, whatever that tax might be, let's say it might be, I'm pulling a number out of the sky, $20,000, sure, and that credit might be $5,000. Now your actual taxes, the money out of your pocket, goes down to $15,000. So credits are much better than deductions, and people need to understand the differences between the two. And hopefully I give a basic reason why.
Sure. Now, one of the other things that what do you call it, that there is a, again, the reason they have a tax strategist with you is because there is a time where you can use a tax credit, right? And then, of course, obviously, deduction just comes off your what you're going to pay the IRS. So I know that sometimes, and this is something that you were talking about earlier, having a real business entity separate from yourself versus a sole proprietor is that, and you correct me because I'm not an expert, that as a business entity, you might be able to acquire these tax credits because you're maybe developing a a community, or you might be you might be hiring a X amount of people, or you're starting a new business, and that the federal government, as well as maybe sometimes a state government, might give you tax credits to offset your costs. Am I close?
That's true and correct. That you are close, but there are still a lot of credits available for people that do not have a business. And one thing I just wanted to make perfectly clear, that the IRS and the government has given business owners the ability to deduct what I call post-tax dollars. Most people go out and they earn a W-2, they pay their taxes, and they fund their lifestyle. An entrepreneur, he goes out, earns his money, funds his lifestyle, and then pays his taxes. So what he is able to do are three fundamental things. He's able to do some income shifting income from maybe one entity to another, one family member to another. They're able to use the deductions and credits that we just talked about, and they're also able to postpone taxes into later years. If we take a look at somebody's total financial picture, all three of those elements will come into play. Now, if you're just a W-2 regular earner, there aren't a lot of things that we can do. But if you do have a business, and businesses do include property, other things of that nature, that you can use to deduct certain items and reduce your taxes. So having a business is a blessing in one thing and a curse on the other, because we're highly regulated. And as you know, business pay a lot of taxes, but there are those options to get out of those taxes, not get out of those, I should say, but reduce those taxes. So having a business is an important thing. So that's one of the things I focus in on, is proper business entity selection.
I love that. I love that. You know what? And I want to, and this is just my personal opinion I'm about to offer here, but I'd love for your opinion as well, and chime in on this. You know, every now and then we see individuals, and I'm not sure how old you are, but I'm referring to these individuals, the Hemsleys, who operated some very luxurious hotels in the New York area, and both of them ended up going to jail for tax evasion. And this is where, quote, wealthy or very rich people get sometimes a bad rap, in the sense that these guys were very wealthy, owned a lot of luxurious properties. I think they flew around in their private jet, and yet they were trying to avoid taxes. They were doing something that was, you know, not smart. And to me, especially at that level of wealth, if you're looking for ways to cheat the government, if cheating the government is one of your strategies, you know, not only is that not only legal, but it's that stinking thinking, it's that scarcity mindset. We're, you know, and it's so funny to me that here are a couple who are very wealthy, very powerful, and yet they try to cheat the government out of, I think it was like $1 million or a couple of $1 million. And at that time, their net worth was, you know, something like $200 million or $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was so funny that here's a chunk of money that really has no bearing on their life, but yet their focus was on, you know, their focus was, I guess, in the wrong direction, and they ended up going to jail for it. And you know, again, I'm just using them as a prime example. It can happen to anybody, but it's just so funny that when we focus our energy in the wrong way, it can really lead us down the road and get us into big trouble.
You know, it's kind of funny. And I have a comment on this. Is our system here in the United States? Yes, it is complicated. It can be cumbersome at times, but at least we try to collect as much tax as possible. And I can guarantee you, anybody from another country that comes in here and starts another business, they are taught, they are inbred to, how do I cheat the system? Now, back to the Hemsleys, I don't know the specifics how and why they got caught, What I can tell you one thing, anybody that's a high net worth individual, high income individual, can be expected to be audited. So I would assume or would hope that they would hire a good team of accountants to probably guide them, but more importantly, give them strategies that are reasonable, that are backed up with IRS code or other intangibles that, you know, make this a viable deduction. Again, I don't know the specifics on why they went to jail. Remember, it's called income tax, and people go to jail for avoiding the income, not reporting the income. That is a big,
right.
big deal. You
right.
could have civil penalties, and then it gets into a criminal situation. In fact, I do a lot of what is called tax resolution work, so I deal with people that are, let's say, on the fringe, that haven't filed taxes or pulling some shenanigans. So I kind of know what's going on out there, the personalities that get involved with those illicit activities, but they do happen. But anybody that's that kind of net worth or income level should be expected to be audited and should, you know, do things properly, but, you know, do it within the code.
Right, right. And, you know, and something that you said that that I find remarkable and outstanding in that as you said, the code is complicated. It is so complicated that if anybody has ever been on hold with the IRS, they have a little audio disclosure that says the information provided to you by one of our agents, may not be relied on. Bottom line is, it's so complicated that the own IRS agents can misinterpret, misquote, misuse that their code. And I'm saying this because not only is that to me disheartening and just remarkable that you can't even rely on the IRS agents to know what they're supposed to do, but that the IRS can make and will make mistakes because they're human.
Of course they are. And you mentioned the very beginning of this conversation, we are in the people business. And let's face it, people that work for the IRS are human beings and they do make mistakes. Today's environment with the IRS has been changing. They had many senior auditors that have now left, so you have a lot of younger auditors that just don't know what they're doing. And the code is about 70,000 pages. And even from my side of the fence dealing with them, it's cumbersome and it takes a lot of hard work to understand the code. So just imagine if you're some 21-year-old coming out of college and now you've got, you know, to do all this, of course you're going to have some difficulties with it. So that's the problem as far as in an audit or dealing with somebody that's inexperienced is to convincing them that they're right, that you're right, and they need to go back and readdress what they're trying to bring to your attention as far as saying what they owe you. So it's a tough way to deal with it now. And the IRS doesn't do a lot of face-to-face full-on audits. They'll do what are called paper audits. They'll send you a notice saying, we want to see all the expenses or the income for your home office deduction or just your Schedule C. And you send all this paperwork back to their location in Tennessee. And you know who looks at it? The 21-year-old. And
sure,
he just makes opinions and assessments. And then he sends you a bill. So it's difficult to deal with them because it's only via a paper. And it's difficult to get them on the phone and deal with those audits. What I try to do is get them in my area in California so I can have a face-to-face with people because, let's face it, a lot of it's just interpretation. So if they interpret it one way, I need to make a position to interpret it for my client and their best interest. And because of the paper audit, I don't get that opportunity. It's unfortunate, but I don't get that.
Wow. Well, you know what, and I want to talk about this because you mentioned the CPA, and there's another designation out there that I want you to help clarify, and that is the enrolled agent. What purpose is the enrolled agent? Is this an IRS thing, or is this just somebody trying to make money during tax season? What is an enrolled agent?
An enrolled agent is a designation that has been earned from the IRS. I took a two-day exam on nothing but taxes. And to differentiate that between that, myself, and a CPA takes another two-day exam approximately depending on their state. And it's also involving audit, other related issues other than tax. And oddly enough, none of the questions on the CPA exam have to do with tax planning. It's just tax compliance. So they're designation issued by the state minus issued by the IRS, and I have a lot of continuing education to do that. But it's kind of a cute story on how an enrolled agent came to be. After the Civil War in the South, there were a lot of land disputes. So the government, in its infamous wisdom, started the enrolled agent status. It wasn't even under the Treasury. And what they would do is they would go out and they would, you know, kind of mitigate whose land is whose and whatnot. And as the Treasury became more involved, they become under the auspice of the Treasury and then got involved with actually dealing with individuals on an ongoing basis. Typically, a CPA is somebody that will be involved with more, how should I say it, more higher-end, more sophisticated strategies, whereas an enrolled agent is more of your, you know, small business owner, your professional. Those are the types of people that deal with them. But unlike a CPA, I can represent my clients in any of the 50 states in tax court, whereas a CPA can only do it in the state that they're involved with. So there's some pluses and there's some minuses. Again, my designation is from the IRS, 2 days of exams, whereas the CPA is a little bit different. So we do nothing but tax work.
I love it. I love it. And you don't do it as a hobby. And again, I'm not trying to, put down anybody that maybe is an enrolled agent and does this a couple of months out of the year to earn extra money. There are some very good people, very qualified to do that. But you do it all the time. This is what you live and breathe. This is your core competency. And Floyd, I'd love to bring you back and talk more. If you guys want to find out how Stephen Floyd can help you, if you want to find out more about him, he's got several books available. Is that right? Several books?
I've got 2 books and one. The third one's being published now.
Okay. Several books available on Amazon.com. You can also reach him at StephenFloyd.net. StephenFloyd.net. Stephen Floyd, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing today.
You're more than welcome. You have a great day.
All righty. Good stuff there from Stephen Floyd about you and your taxes. And let me tell you, taxes is one of the pillars to wealth and peace of mind. Stephen Floyd is the kind of guy who can help you get there. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase Mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool.
You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
We sorry for the dead air, guys. Here I am talking away, and for some reason, my mic was not on, so that's our fault. So let's try that again with our next guest, Sandra Symes. Sandra Symes is a learning and development consultant, published author, and former business executive with 25 years experience, having traveled to 32 countries. She heads up her own consulting company, Dream Team Communications. She lived in Europe for 20 years with VIP clients such as BMW, AT&T, General Motors, and IBM. She has produced a series of self-development CDs and is recently awarded Amazing Woman of 2015-2016 by the Phoenix Suns. Sandra Symes, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hi, thank you. It's good to be on the show.
It's great to have you here. I just love to have amazing women on my show. So this is, I just love this. So let's talk about this. Your book gives guidelines for business owners what to consider the top key success tips. So let's talk about this. When you're talking to somebody and they're asking you about some of the top, success keys, what do you point them to? What are some of your top success keys?
Well, I've spoken to so many entrepreneurial groups, and that's the new thing, right? There's more entrepreneurs in the world now than ever before. That's our, and I think it's an organic American spirit to be an entrepreneur and to be a pioneer in whatever industry is your specialty. But most entrepreneurs I'm finding don't, even though they're very passionate and they're experts at what they do and they're usually really good at it, they don't have a plan. They don't have a clear And I don't mean a plan as far as strategically what are the steps you want to take your business through. Most of them have a good vision on that, but they don't have a financial plan. So that's the first one, is having a real concrete milestone plan of your financials, what you're earning, what you want to earn, what your backup plan is, what your steps are. Most of them are not really clear with that. And that's usually because they're real creative types. That's the first thing. The second is a lot of them, because they're so self-sufficient and so driven and that pioneer mindset, they don't normally use all of the resources that they have. Most of us have a lot of resources that we don't use, extensive. And I don't mean just knowledge and experience, but people. We're connected to many, many people that can help us. So that's the second one. We'll make a list of all the different categories of resources. And the third is for them to ask for help. So we try to do everything ourselves as entrepreneurs. And we do have to do many things ourselves. But it's really advantageous and beneficial and just a smart thing to do to hire experts. Ask for help and don't do it all yourself. And have an expert do it. I'm talking about websites, financial things, anything having to do with your publishing, all that kind of stuff. Make sure you ask for help. That's the third. And the fourth is to have financial backing. And that can be sponsorships, that can be joint ventures, all kinds of things. But to have, because when you're an entrepreneur, your business goes through different cycles, just like a brand. I studied brands and worked on strategic brands for 20 years when I worked at Ogilvy & Mather. And a brand goes through a specific life cycle, right? And so
yes.
Does our business. So does a person, yeah. And so the business goes through different cycles, ups and downs. And so you need to make sure you have all the financial backing to make sure and fill in all those gaps when you have those lulls in your business. I'm in the training business, and it's definitely seasonal. It's slower in the summer, and so I need to make sure I have financial resources for that. So those are the four things that people normally don't do. All of those: financial plan, using your resources, asking for help, and have backing. Yeah.
You know what? And one of the things I want to also mention, because I think this is so important, you were talking about. You said resources, and I love the fact that you said, hey, I'm not just talking about money, but you know, there are so many resources out there for small business who are just getting started. You know, there's the, the small business resources.
Yes.
There, by the small business, the small business
Bureau?
Administration. All right. SBA has tons of great free resources. There's this old technology called the library that's chock full of, free resources that we sometimes forget about. YouTube has a lot of how-to resources on there that are free. So there's so many resources available. And I think the difference between a lot of us is that is not being resourceful with the resources we have. Right. They'll look at something and they'll say, oh, you know what? I don't have the money. I don't have the money that I need to do this and that. And you just mentioned something which a lot of people never think about, and that is getting a sponsor. So if you don't have the money, maybe you can get a sponsor that is willing to collaborate with you and get the publicity, get the traffic, get the exposure to help you with your book, with your website, with your whatever. Because it's something that will be a benefit to them. So
that's right.
I love this idea about being resourceful and versus just saying, oh, I don't have that.
That's right. I don't have that, or I don't know how to do that. I need to do that to go to the next step, but I don't know how to do that, so I'm going to ask for help. And the best partnerships are ones where you have the same, not just the same intention, but the same target audience. So find someone, for example, I love to do pro bono work at the high schools on self-esteem and self-confidence, because a lot of our teenagers, because we're so such a tech-savvy community now, world, we're forgetting how to communicate, right? We're forgetting how to communicate in person, how to present, how to transfer our ideas. And a lot of that has to do with just practice and self-confidence. And so I do a lot of pro bono work at the high school. I call it Ignite Your Inner Rockstar, is that class, and it's really, really fun. And so I find someone else who is interested, right, in promoting and empowering our youth. And those are the kind of people that can sponsor those kind of ventures. So find someone that has the same target audience, and they're more than happy to help.
I think that's a great idea. And, you know, that to me was a great example of that, especially for a lot of speakers out there, even business people who maybe, quote, don't want to be necessarily make a living of speaking. You can empower the community, or empower the youth, or empower whatever your charitable organization is, and have somebody sponsor it. It's about being resourceful. Sometimes people call it, thinking out of the box, and it's a little bit of all that. But again, if you really want to get something done, it's not about what you don't have. It's about using what you do have. So I think that is something that, we all have to, get better at. Let me ask you this. So tell us a little bit about your background. Here you are, you're working in the corporate world. So how did you go from, business executive to entrepreneur?
Always listen to your clients. That's the message. I was supervising 8 countries, working for Ogilvy & Mather in Vienna, for the headquarters in Vienna. And I had 8 country teams. And I quickly found out, because my job, of course, was to make sure all of the communication for our brands was strategically aligned. My key client was Kraft Foods. And I quickly learned that my teams in some of these countries had brilliant ideas, but they were not communicating them properly, so they weren't winning the pitches. So I started doing evening workshops. I started doing my own training. On presentations, on client services, on what questions to ask, on all kinds of things. And somebody said, you should just be a trainer. So after a few years of doing that I was doing that in the evening while I was working during the day with my advertising role. And so I was living in, actually at that time, in Budapest, which is 2.5 hours away from Vienna. And there was a Dale Carnegie a franchise in Vienna. So I drove to Vienna and I took the course, which was in German. I speak no German. I was the only American in a class of 32 Austrians who were doing the course in German. I would do my presentations in English. A lot of Austrian people speak English, about 80%. And so after the course, that's a 3-month course, the owner said, I want you to be one of my trainers. So I became the first American certified as a Dale Carnegie Global Trainer in Vienna. And that catapulted into all kinds of workshops, and I became certified in sales training, leadership training, content development. I've developed some courses for Dale Carnegie as well that are now being used, actually. They're being used at AT&T in Slovakia right now, which is hilarious to me. I'm just a girl from Texas.
So what part of Texas?
I'm from San Antonio, the best part.
Oh, the best part. I like that you said that. I grew up in Houston. Used to go to San Antonio all the time. It's good to meet a fellow Texan there. Now, are you now in Phoenix?
So now I'm in Phoenix. Yeah, so that catapulted into me starting my own business because I had a lot of other resources, just like we've been talking about, that I wanted to share with my clients that were other strategies and other philosophies that were not Dale Carnegie. And so I started Dream Team Communication so that I could provide those services and then one-on-one coaching. So I did that. I've been doing that for about 15 years. I decided I wanted to move back to the United States after traipsing all over the world, missed my family. And at that time, my two brothers and my mom had moved to Phoenix, so I had a choice of moving to Texas, where they're not anymore, or moving to Phoenix. My sister lived in Portland. Yeah, so I moved to Phoenix, yeah.
Well, great.
I've been here for 6 years. Yeah, I miss Texas. I go as often as I can. I still have a couple of VIP clients there, yes.
Yes, I think we've been in Phoenix now for 15 years, and I enjoy it. You know what? And I'm grateful that that Phoenix has is very similar to Texas, or at least Houston, because it has a lot of the same demographic buildup, a great Hispanic community. It has some of my favorite restaurants here, and it doesn't have the humidity that Houston has. So I enjoy that. I enjoy that aspect of it. But, you know, like you, I also, I also miss Texas. I still have a lot of family there, and it's good to go back and get my Texas on and get some, one of the things I haven't found here in Phoenix is a good Cuban restaurant. So I'm Cuban, and so Houston has a couple of good ones, so I'm still looking. But let's talk about this. Your book, Bring Your A Game. Talk about how this came about. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, most people don't. Most people don't bring their A game. Most people are reserving some of their magic. We are very, very powerful beings. When we really just sit still and use all of our creative juices, I call it, it's amazing what people will come up with. My courses are usually very interactive. Like you normally don't sit for more than, 20, 25 minutes. We're standing up, we're drawing, we're speaking, we're doing all kinds of things. And that's where the magic is, because that's when they're bringing their A game, because their inhibitions are just dissolved. It's just like, when you go see a concert,
mm-hmm.
and you leave it and everybody's applauding, and then you applaud and people say encore, encore, and they want one more.
Yeah.
And then what does the band usually come back and play? What they're great at. They usually come back at the end after it's finished. The encore is usually their favorite song, their top hit, right? Something that they love to do. And that's the point. The point is we should start with the encore. We always hold back. I don't know why. People do that all the time. They do it in business. They do it in their career. They do it in their personal life. I believe people do it in their personal life as well, in relationships.
Sure.
Always holding back a little bit. I say just bring your A game or don't play at all, because that's why we're here. And your A game, like your A game, Bert, is there's no one else that has an A game like you. So if we don't play our A game, if we don't bring it, it's going to be lost forever in the world. So it's a gift to be shared. That's why I talk so much about using your resources or to get a sponsorship. It's not just because you need help. It's because you're sharing your A game. It's like a gift when you do that with someone, isn't it? When you ask, you know how good it feels when you give someone a gift that you've been planning for a long time and you're like, oh, wow, they're going to love this. Something you created or you made or you put together or you found. That's how somebody else feels when you allow them to help. And that's bringing your A game. Because your A game is not just you. It's a collaboration with everybody else as well, including whoever you're serving, including whoever you're servicing, your clients, your participants, your partners, whoever that happens to be. So that's what prompted me to title it Bring Your A Game. People don't do that.
Well, you know what? And it's so true. We don't bring the A game to ourselves. We don't demand the A game of ourselves. We don't bring it to our relationships, to our business, to our health. There's so many areas. I know that, fear is a lot of that is what's holding us back, right? We're afraid to ask for the date. We're afraid to ask for the sale. We're afraid to really put ourselves out there. Writing a book, there's millions of people who are afraid to write a book because they're going to be judged. They may be criticized, and therefore they don't bring their A game. And then this has happened to everybody, where somebody else brings the A game, will make a suggestion that somebody else might be thinking of, or may call it create an app or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, and that person will say, man, I was thinking about that. I should have done that. I've been thinking about that for years. That is what happens when you don't bring your A game.
That's right. I really do believe this. I mean, it's quantum physics, right? Everything is energy. And
yes.
So you talked a little bit about energy with your previous caller on taxes, actually, the energy that you put in. And I do believe that. And thoughts are energy, too. So you could be thinking of a great thing, and you better bring your A game and just go for it. Otherwise, thoughts are energy, and someone else can pick it up. That's really what I feel. Not to put any fear, because we have enough
right.
fear, but just it really is about honoring who you are and using all of your magnificence. My mission that's on my card is I help people connect with their magnificence. And that can be at a leadership training for BMW in London, or it could be, you know, in Scottsdale speaking to women in real estate. It doesn't matter. We all have magnificence in us, and it's important to bring our A game. It's really important. Otherwise, you're not sharing. That's how I persuade people to go the extra mile, let's say.
I love it. Listen, Sandra, we're out of time. I'd love to bring you back and talk more about bringing your A game. Also, put me down on your list of possible collaborators. If you're going to be doing something in the Valley at a high school, I'd be glad to come out and help. Sandra Sines,
That'd
thank you
good.
So much for stopping by.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Good stuff there from Sandra Sines about bringing your A game, available on Amazon. And also you can, you know what? I forgot to ask her website. But anyway, so the book is called Bringing Your A Game. So bring it. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Fro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right. We are back. My next guest, Libby Oosterhoff. Libby Oosterhoff is the co-founder and CEO of Busker, a live streaming platform based in L.A. And it's an app that you can download on your phone and start promoting yourself, your business, get your message out there. This is a fun-to-use app. I've downloaded it myself. I've used it a few times. So I wanted to get Lippy on the show to talk more about how you can use live streaming via Busker. And you can go to busker.co to download the app, or go to the app store and get it there from there. Lippy Oosterhoff, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Bringing my A game, by the way. I carried in my extra bag. Lots of A game here.
I love it. You know what? Let's see if V Gates Lippy.
Oh, sehr gut. Vielen Dank. I'm actually from the Netherlands, but you know, The Netherlands is a tiny little country next to Germany, so we all happen to, you know German pretty well. So, yes.
That's good to know. All right. So you see, I just assume with a name like Oosterhof that there'd be some Deutsch in there, but so I'm glad you straightened me out there. Yeah. So
it's pretty close.
I know about six words in German. Wie geht's is one of them. And then I think the one that I use the most is now I even forgot it. So we'll come to that later. But let's talk about live streaming.
Sure.
You know, live streaming is exploding, right? I mean, live streaming now is mainstream, and if you're not live streaming, you're in trouble.
Pretty much. It's interesting. So live streaming, first of all, it's nothing new, right? This live streaming stuff, it's been around for about 10 years. The reason that it's being so, that it's now so hyped and so popular is that the technology is finally there, right? So you can stream great quality video from a mobile phone, which is incredible. And, you know, all the technology has caught up. So, yes, you know, it's finally here. And you're totally right. You know, live streaming has gone mainstream, right? No pun intended. So there is a slight caveat. So the fact that it's possible doesn't mean that we have figured out why this is useful and who should benefit and who can benefit from that. And that's what we're going through at the moment, right? So you see everybody kind of jumping on this bandwagon, lots of companies, big companies like Facebook and like Twitter, small companies like Meerkat and Busker, you know, there's a bunch of startups in there. And everybody knows, yeah, there's something here, you know, there's something about live streaming that is special and that's going to create a ton of value for its users and for businesses. But collectively, we're trying to figure out what the real benefits are and what the use cases are. So that's kind of what we're going through at the moment. And it's a super interesting time. And if you're running a business, if you're working for yourself and helping other businesses, you really need to understand what's going on, and you need to understand the landscape of live streaming products, and then figure out how can you use this best to run your business, to market your business, or to help your clients.
Absolutely. Well, you know, this is what it reminds me of. It reminds me of the internet 25 years ago or 30 years ago, right? Where everybody's going, wow, this internet stuff is great. How do we use it?
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it's just now, you know, in that discovery phase, right? So we're still trying, like you said, we're still trying to figure out, okay, how is this useful? How is this going to be something that we want to use? And for those people who have never been without the internet, let's call Busker the next version of social media 2.0, in the sense that you can get a message out there at no cost. And a lot of people are still scratching their head today going, how do I monetize social media? So I think that Busker and a lot of these platforms like Busker are in the same, you know, are in that same category where all of us are trying to figure out, how do I do it?
Yeah.
And so let's talk about this. When I sign up for Busker, I can use my Facebook to log in or my Twitter to log in. Does that mean that my broadcast will go to Twitter or go to Facebook?
Well, in a way, yes. You can tell your Facebook friends or your followers and everybody that follows you on Twitter, you can let them know that you're now broadcasting on Busker. And when they see that message, they can then download the app and then follow you and enjoy the content, right? So the when you go live on the Busker app, the live stream is available to everybody who's on the app, and they can interact with you there. If you're not on the app, then you can see a message that indicates that you are live on Busker, but you have to download the app in order to watch the broadcast. If you're on a desktop computer and you see a message on Facebook saying, hey, Bert is live on Busker, you can simply click on the link and then your browser opens and you can still watch the stream from your desktop. But in order to really get the most benefit out of all the features that we have, you need to download the app and then watch the content within the app.
Now, let me ask you this. When you guys were sitting around developing Busker, why go with a mobile app only versus mobile and desktop, or mobile and other devices? Why just keep it on mobile?
Sure, great question. So we decided to start with mobile, right? We're not limited to mobile. You can still watch stuff on the desktop. And we're actually, you know, in the middle of developing a richer version of our desktop website, so that all the things you can do on the mobile, you can also do on the desktop. So it's not that we're going to exclude the desktop. It's just that we decided to start with the mobile first because, look, it's a supercomputer that everybody has one in their pocket, right?
Yes.
And it's a great place to start. And you've maybe heard of this cliche of mobile first. And we decided to embrace that. Make sure that it works on mobile. Make sure that it's really optimized for mobile. And then work yourself backwards to make sure that it works on other platforms as well, like, you know, a desktop computer. And the other reason is that, look, what we're talking about live streaming here. How do you create a live stream? Well, in most cases, you just use your smartphone and you click a button and you start streaming. So the phone is the creation device. And we decided, okay, let's just make sure that we create an amazing experience on the phone. And then once that is successful, then add the desktop. So that's why we decided to do that. But again, you know, we're not exclusively on mobile. It's just that we decided to start with the mobile.
All right. So I'm going to start. I just started my broadcast on Busker. Here we are. I'm sitting down with the co-founder and CEO of Busker, Lippi Oosterhoff. And just having a great conversation about live streaming. Let me ask you this, Lippi. For a company or a brand, whether you have a big company, a small company, or maybe you're a solo practitioner, what are some of the best tips or best ways to use live streaming or Busker?
Well, this goes back to what we were talking a few minutes ago. It really depends on what kind of business you run, right? I think for your audience, what is interesting about live streaming is that it combines it's basically a combination of television and the internet, right?
Yes.
And it combines the best of both. So what's great about TV? Well, what's great about TV is that it's visual and it's you've got audio and it's very immersive, right? Much more
right.
than a 40, you know, 140 character tweet. And then unlike a YouTube video, because it's live, it's interactive like the internet, right? So you can immediately respond to questions from your customers or from other people that are potentially interested in your brand or your product. And this interactivity that creates an incredible amount of engagement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And engagement is
yes.
the first step towards success. Right, so that's,
ooh,
that's
I like
really
that.
Exciting.
I want to repeat that engagement is the first step to success. Great quote. I'm gonna have to steal that one.
Thank you. But it's true, right? If we have people on our platform that run a small business and that are very passionate about their business, and they can talk with great authenticity about their products and about their business, and they have people watching them in real time, live on a video stream, and those
right.
people get intrigued, right? But, you know, you still need to take a few more steps before somebody is really ready to give you money because, you know, unless you're a big brand, people need to establish a little bit more trust with you. And that's
sure.
where live video comes in because it's a great way to – it's almost like having a conversation with somebody, right? So – if you step into a store, the salesperson is there to answer your questions and help you make a decision to purchase, right? And this is what live streaming allows us to do. As a small business, you can have almost like a FaceTime call, if you will, with as many people as you want at the same time. Of course, you don't see those other people, but they can type messages on the screen, and you can respond to those messages. And it's almost like having a one-to-many, broadcasting situation where, we have small businesses that stream successfully to 100, 150 people. So we're not talking about 5 million. Now, this is a small group of potentially interested people that are, intrigued by what you have to say. And then it's your job to show your passion, your knowledge, and your expertise, and to engage with your customers and inform them and entertain them as well, right? Because, business is all about making people feel good and building trust, but also about entertaining them. So we've created a platform where viewers can get to know you and your business, and they can interact with you, which is the great thing about the internet. Television never offered that, right? Interaction.
Right.
And then
right.
When you're ready to transact, you can transact right there during the live stream. And this is something that nobody else is doing, not even Facebook or Twitter. We have gone full circle with the cycle of building interest and then letting people take action and making a purchase. And the way that works is, let's say that I'm watching a broadcast on Busker, and after a while I really enjoy what the broadcaster is talking about, and then I want to buy this product. And the way that works is you click a button in the broadcast, and it shows the details about the product.
Right.
And you're still watching the broadcast at this point. You can still hear the person talking to you. You can see it. But you see a small window that gives you a little bit more information about the product. And then you can click buy, and then you've purchased it. And that's it. It's two clicks, right? Now, why is this exciting? It means that as a business owner, you can benefit from the power of live video, so this visual and audio and this immersive experience combined with the great interaction of the internet, and you have the ability to sell products. And what we, as a team, when we got together to build this business called Busker, we said the combination of live streaming and commerce is a match made in heaven. Because
yes.
Now you can get as close to your customer as possible, and you can help your customers make a decision to transact. Almost like that old-fashioned salesperson in the shop, but now it happens on the internet. So why not take that final step and build that into the product as well? Because what other live streaming apps do, right, they say, okay, I'm a small business. I'm live streaming on some platform, and I'm going to tell everybody on there to go to my website and to buy a product. Well, guess what?
Yes.
People don't do that. The conversion is terrible because people get distracted. They do other things, and they forget the website. Just in your previous interview, great interview, and I'd love to read the book, but where's the website address?
Well,
where's
the website address?
Exactly, right? So imagine that you're listening to you're watching a live stream, and then as soon as you go like, oh, you know what? I'm really interested in buying this book. And with one click, you've bought the book, you stay in the live stream, and then everybody else that's watching can see that you just bought this book, including the broadcaster, right? So the broadcaster can say, hey, thanks for making the purchase. Really appreciate it. Other people say, oh, Bert just bought a book. You know what? I'm going to buy a book as well, right? So we have this kind of community feel that is created by the fact that people don't leave the broadcast to transact, they do it while they're live enjoying the broadcast. So that's what makes Busker so special.
Yeah, you know what? I think this is such a phenomenal thing, not only live streaming, but this additional tool that Busker has of being able to make a transaction happen right there. And, you know, something that you hit on that is so important, that if you're a big brand, trust, you know, especially, let's say, a brand like, I don't know, Coca-Cola, it's been around over 100 years, the trust is almost, you know, built in. But when you are just starting out, you're just a few years old, nobody knows you, then you have to earn that trust. And
exactly,
you're able to do this live stream and create the trust, create that personal touch, as you said, interact with people. And maybe you sell a $5 or $7 or $20 widget, something just to test the waters of trust, if you will, and develop the relationship from there. But this is like a no-brainer. And what's so nice about what has happened is that before, you know, when people started doing videos, when video first entered the space, a lot of people were taking the time to do a video with a specific backdrop and lights and just really mm-hmm. professional videos. Well, now, because of Busker and things like Busker, you know, we no longer have to do that. YouTube, we see a lot of people on YouTube who have phenomenal followers, but yet, you know, they're unshaven. Sometimes they look like they're running around in a t-shirt, and guess what? They're just engaging. And I love what you said, that engagement is that first step, because it's true. So whether, you know, you don't have to have you don't have to spend hundreds or thousands of dollars to create the perfect video. You just have to have good content, clear audio, and something that engages and compels the audience, and Busker to help you deliver all that.
Exactly. You know what the key word is here? Authenticity.
Hmm. Authenticity.
Right?
Yes. So, I love that.
Right. And that is so unbelievably important. And you get authenticity from taking your phone out and using the front-facing camera and point it at your face and start talking. Right.
Yeah.
That is as honest and as direct and as raw as it gets, because you can't edit a live video, right? If you're
right.
live streaming and you're on the air and a bunch of people are watching you and they're asking you questions, well, some of those questions may not be, you know, super positive. There may be somebody who's a bit critical. Now how are you going to handle that, right? You
right.
can't just hang up and decide to ignore that person, right? So This is what live streaming. This is what makes live streaming so special. It's very authentic because you can't hide behind a nicely edited video. And YouTube is full of those edited videos where, you know, our business is based in LA, so we have tons of influencers here, right? Influencers are
yes.
basically, you know, young kids that have more followers and more viewers than CNN on a given day. So brands pay them big money to promote their products, right? And how do they do
right.
that? They make a beautifully edited video with makeup and with lights, and they do 4 or 5 takes of the same joke, and then they put like a 10-minute video or a 5-minute video on YouTube, and of course they get like, 5 million views. This is very different. Live streaming is totally different. And we've experimented with this. We invited some of those YouTubers and we said, hey, why don't you come and live stream on our platform? And you know what? Most of them did a really bad job because they were so used to benefiting from all of these production techniques that suddenly they were naked. Suddenly they were in front of their own phone camera, right?
Right?
And they had to respond in real time. And it takes... You know, it takes talent. Not everybody is good at live streaming. So I think this is another very
that.
Important topic,
that.
Right?
Well, you know what,
because,
and I think that it comes down to knowing your product, knowing, you know, your stuff. Because,
yeah.
I, you know,
yeah.
if you really know your stuff, then criticism isn't going to be a problem. Somebody may say, hey, I don't like
yeah.
your book. I don't like your program. I don't like this. And And it doesn't matter. To me, it doesn't matter what they say. In fact, to me, if you're being criticized, you're probably on the right step, right? I think criticism and fear are kind of signals that you're probably in the right step. Now, sometimes you may get creative criticism, like somebody may say, hey, you know what, you need to adjust your light because, you know, you're looking like a big shadow, then that's constructive criticism. And that's okay. But I love what you're, I love this idea of being authentic, of being real, of not being rehearsed. And people can relate to that. And some people are not going to like you. And that's okay, because you're going to have a bunch of people that will like you. I mean, look at a perfect example is look at the current president of the United States. Look at the candidates that are running for the presidency. There's a lot of people that hate them and a lot of people that like them, and that's okay. It's just the way the world is. Not everybody's going to like you. You just have to be your authentic self and just, what do you call it, attract the people that will like you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we're super excited about the democratization of commerce in a way, right? So if you're running a small business and you don't have a big brand, that everybody knows, you know, it's a struggle to convince people that haven't met you to believe in you and trust you and transact with you. And we believe that live streaming video is a fantastic platform to start that relationship and build that trust, right? So we're excited about that. But, you know, we have to be honest. Live streaming is not easy, right? So, yes, it's great that it's authentic, but you also have to think about, hey, you know, am I the right person to live stream and to be the broadcaster? And we worked with a bunch of small businesses, and some people are absolutely amazing, right? Because they have this passion and they're eloquent and they're funny and they bring energy and they do all of these things. But other business owners say, well, you know, it's just not me, right? I feel uncomfortable doing this and you know, I find it stressful, and I don't have the ability to be live for 45 minutes. You know, lots of people hate having that picture taken as well, right? It's the same thing.
Right, right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It just means maybe you don't have, you know, the right personality for this live streaming stuff. Now, if that's the case, that's totally fine, and you shouldn't feel bad about that. In fact, most people on our platform or on any live streaming platform very quickly learn that, you know, it's not for them, right? And what we do is we then, you know, help you find somebody in your organization or, you know, even outside of your organization. We have a bunch of very talented people that are great at live streaming, and we can connect you to those people, right? So if you have a particular product or a service and you think that live streaming is great for you and you have lots of followers on Facebook and Twitter and you want to bring live streaming to them and make sure and you want to use Busker so you can let people transact, great. If you don't want to go live yourself, talk to us and then we'll find somebody on our platform that could represent your business, right? Because it's live streaming is great, but also a bit scary, and you know it takes a certain personality to do it right.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love it. You know, it is one of those things, again, like social media, like the internet, that you're going to have to learn sooner or later. You're going to have to get involved. And I love this idea that you brought up of maybe if it's not you, then some start finding somebody in the organization that maybe can do it for you. Lippy, we're out of time. Again, guys, if you want to go check out Busker, it's BUSKER.co. You can download it on all the different app stores. Lippy, thank you so much for stopping by. I've had a wonderful time. Looking forward to having you back again.
Same here. Thanks a lot. And good luck with
you
the
bet.
Show. Take care.
Thank you. Good stuff
okay,
there
bye-bye.
From Lippy Oosteroff on the latest platform, Busker. It's phenomenal. Check it out, BUSKER.co, or download it from the App Store and start using it. Start playing around with it. Start experimenting. See how it can work for you and your business. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.